This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Number 319 of What Did You Watch This Week?
Yeah, looks like it.
My name's Mike.
My name is John.
What's going down, sir?
Some stuff and things. I got a message from you that you were you had finished up Umbrella Academy, and we also had a couple episodes of The Orville, and there was a lot of stuff this week. I don't think I watched any movies, though.
I watched at least one movie.
And I wow, that's watched, not a lot for you.
I may have watched two movies.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% about that.
I feel like the stuff that I did watch was good.
Yeah.
For the most part. Or at least
yeah.
Talk-worthy.
I didn't watch a lot, though. I mean, I don't feel like I watched a lot, which probably means I watched way more than I thought.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes. Yeah. You're like, I didn't watch much, and then, oh, and I watched this, and I watched this.
Right.
I mean, at the very least, we've got like four episodes of Umbrella and two of Orville to talk about.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I started The Terminal List on Amazon Prime.
Oh, how's that?
I really like it. I've watched the first three episodes.
That's the Christopher Star-Lord Pratt one, correct?
It certainly is, yes. Yeah, no, I enjoy the hell out of it, actually.
Nice. What's the premise on it again? I keep seeing so many different trailers for different things that I can't keep them straight in my head. Like, he was in the Tomorrow War, which was different than this.
Yeah, so, okay, it's called The Terminal List. It's actually based on a book, apparently.
Okay.
Former Navy SEAL officer investigates why his entire platoon was ambushed during a high-stakes covert mission. There's a lot of thriller elements to it. There's a lot of, like, murder mystery elements to it. He's had a bad concussion, and so his memory is kind of a little bit junky, and so he's questioning his own memory at times. And, you know, there's stuff happening that he sees that no one else does and no one believes him.
Okay.
There's elements of
that. Are we talking supernatural stuff or
no,
more
no,
like
nothing
thriller?
Supernatural. Just like more psychological thriller. Like, like he's a Navy SEAL. He's a high ranking Navy SEAL member. His platoon got ambushed. Everyone got killed. He's trying to find answers. Other things happen. Investigators kind of don't believe him. There's conspiracies left and right, up and down and everywhere. I mean, at times it's almost a little much, like the layers and layers of conspiracy or shit going on. But at the same time, I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to give it away, but I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome. I don't know if it's something I'll check out, but it sounds cool.
I didn't set an alarm, Alexa. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Nice.
And I'm, like I said, three episodes in. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I would give it a hard sell.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd give it a hard sell, a hard push. I would say this as well. There's only eight episodes in the series, but the first episode was a little weak, but it gets better after that.
Would you say that it was weak sauce?
No, just a little weak, like a little like, okay, that was interesting. I'm going to keep watching, though, and see what else happens type of thing.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah. I picked up a new show this week as well.
What new show did you pick up this week, sir?
There's actually a lot of them that I wanted to pick up, but tonight we watched the first episode on Netflix of How to Build a Sex Room.
Oh, okay. I saw that. The wife and I saw that. We had a good chuckle and thought, when can we ever watch this?
Right. I was thinking the same thing as I'm watching it. I'm like, there's no way that they could ever watch this with Wesley in or near the room. It's tame, but it's still the subject matter is such that you would never watch it with him. I will say that it's like kind of part HGTV makeover and a little dabbling into sex stuff. So far, we've met two couples in the first episode and spent most of our time making fun of them, which was actually the most enjoyable part of the show. It's interesting to see some of the stuff that the woman puts together for them in their sex rooms. Some of it seems cool. Some of it seems a little over the top, but you know, she basically sits down with the people and she'll be like, you know, you want a sex room? Tell me about like what you want, what type of people you are. And, you know, then she shows them some toys and such, and she'll be like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And kind of gauges them from there and then designs it to their specifications, not even to their specifications. Like, you know, the first one, they were like, we want something that's like rock and roll, a dungeon that's a rock and roll. And so, you know, that was one of the themes, was rock and roll dungeon. It's very interesting. You'll never be able to watch it, unfortunately. So far, I can't give it a hard sell, but we've only seen one episode. I'll be interested to see how it progresses, though, because I feel like, and one thing that we talked about was the first two couples seem very tame, very vanilla. Like, when you think a couple says, hey, we want to build a sex room, you're thinking people who are like, yeah, I want this, this, this. Like, these people were like, I don't know what I like. We're into butt play. We got him a butt plug. Like that's your idea of butt play. Like these people were all very vanilla and tame. So I was expecting people who were like hardcore BDSM or, you know, into a rope kink or at least had kinks, but so far, no. There's more coming though. There's more couples coming.
All right. Well, I might check it out on my lonesome.
Okay.
Yes. Seems almost sad, but maybe not.
No. Because it's really like you'd watch it and be like, oh, yeah, hon, you're not like it's not titillating. You're not going to watch it and be like, ooh, I'm turned on watching this. It's more like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. She talked about in the first episode, a St. Andrew's cross. And it's one of those big X crosses that you can strap somebody to. So that they're basically standing up and their ankles are strapped in at the bottom and wrist at the top, and she was talking about how it's derived from Saint Andrew was one of the apostles, and he was crucified, but he wasn't crucified on a cross, he was crucified on an X. So somehow that's been appropriated to be a sex toy thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're learning something too. Probably the funniest part though was the first episode, like when their Saint Andrew's cross and their spanking bench showed up. And it was in this giant wooden crate that says on the outside, exercise equipment. And the woman's like, yes, this is how they ship it so that it's discreet. And then the fucking people, not the couple, the construction worker and the woman opened the crate out on the front lawn in the crowded neighborhood, took the stuff out and were displaying it, like leaning it against the house. She's riding on the sex bench going, yeah, whip me in front of all the neighbors. I'm like, we were losing it. We're laughing so hard. We're like, this is not discreet. This is not like everyone's going to know exactly what you're doing. It's bad enough that you've got camera crews out there recording this. Now you're putting your sex. He's like, oh, here's the axe. I'm going to lean this against the house right here.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. I will also say that our Doctor Who continues. We did the Christmas Carol, which by Julia's own words, she's like, I was worried when you said Christmas Carol because it's been so overdone. You know, it's been done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand why she'd feel that way. Yes.
But what a good episode. What a good take on A Christmas Carol with the girl in the ice. And oh, it was heart wrenching.
It absolutely is.
So we got through that one, and then we did The Impossible Astronaut and The Day of the Moon, because of course you reach the end of The Impossible Astronaut. It's like, what? Oh, did I forget to mention this is a two-parter?
Dick move.
And of course, you know, Mark Shepard's in there, and I was talking about how Mark Shepard is the sci-fi god because he's in, you know, Firefly and Battlestar and Supernatural and now the Doctor X-Files. Who. The X-Files, and yeah, he's in everything sci-fi because he's fucking Mark Shepard.
I have a Mark Shepard signed X-Files card that I sent him back before Supernatural, Doctor Who, all that business.
Nice.
He was doing a play somewhere, and I mailed it to the Playhouse, and he signed the card and sent it back to me.
Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Before he was famous.
He basically, yeah. And then remember we saw him a few years back at Rhode Island Comic Con?
Sure did. That was great.
It was great.
The was he in Warehouse 13?
Yes. Oh yeah, he was in Warehouse 13.
That's why we saw him there, right?
Yes.
He was there for the Warehouse 13.
No, actually, he was not there for the Warehouse 13 segment. That was just
he was there for the Supernatural segment.
Supernatural, yes. He was not in the Warehouse 13 one.
That's right.
I almost feel like they're at the same time.
No, they weren't. The Warehouse 13 was at the same time as The Walking Dead next door, remember?
That's right, it was like, The Walking Dead, because they were just super loud next door.
Yeah, and so our guys, Eddie and Saul, were pumping us up. They're like, come on, let's get as noisy as them.
We were in definitely a third of the size room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we also watched The Curse of the Black Spot, which arguably one of the weaker ones this episode.
Yeah. But still.
Yeah, because the next one, I was like, as soon as this episode ends, hit back, because HBO has them up there with that whole, you know, next time on, and it shows you the clips. And I was like, no, you hit back, because the next one is The Doctor's Wife.
Yeah, we don't have any spoilers for that.
No, I'm so excited for that one. But yeah, the Doctor Who is going well, and I mean, we're cranking right along. Before you know it, we'll be up to Capaldi, and then, I mean, we'll probably be caught up by the time the next season comes out.
Oh, gee, you might at this rate.
And I'm okay with that.
Absolutely. Kate and I finished the season of Alone that we were on.
Okay, nice.
It was pretty solid and compelling. I mean, we enjoyed it. I wouldn't say like, oh my God, it's so fucking amazing. But we'll probably check out one of the earlier seasons because we have it on. It's on Discovery Plus.
Okay.
We're also caught up on not Oak Island, Deadliest Catch. Again, it's just a show that if you like it, you like it, and it's on TV, and we enjoy watching it. I wouldn't give it a hard sell, but I mean, like, I enjoy it.
I never got into it. I had somebody in my life who was into it, and I just couldn't get into it, and I was okay with that.
Yeah,
it's not a bad show. It wasn't like I was looking at it going, oh, this is fucking terrible. It wasn't bad. It just didn't really get into it. So
now, are you watching American Horror Stories?
I am.
All right. So the second episode's called Aura, and it stars Gadbury Sibley, who is on Precious, and she was on like the Coven season of American Horror Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in a couple of seasons, but she's playing a different character here. And then Max Greenfield, best known from New Girl, who's been on American Horror Stories before, was also in this. Schmitty. this was interesting. This was almost like a Black Mirror type episode.
Very much so.
You have a smart doorbell, like Ring, like with a camera on it. Mm-hmm. And without giving it away, they would see a person on the camera. But then, of course, when they opened the door, they weren't there. The neighbors never saw him. Nothing. But yet other people have experienced this as well. She, you know, went to the internet and saw that other people were experiencing this as well, where, you know, someone would come to the camera. And but they wouldn't actually be there. But you could see him on the camera on the device there. So I really enjoyed it. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great. Like you said, it was very Black Mirror, which is the modern Twilight Zone. Yep. It gave me vibes of both of them, and I really enjoyed it. I thought that it was well done. I thought that they were going to end it at one point, like when basically I thought that her story was going to complete it. That's what I'll say. But then we got a new visitor, and I was like, yeah. Ooh, there's more.
Like a bonus story, and then yeah. That tied into possibly, you know, the third story.
So, yeah, so you get where I'm going. Yeah, the third story. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would give this whole season a hard sell so far. There's only been two episodes, but they've been doing it for me.
Well, I thought this season, I mean, I really enjoyed last season. I thought they did a great job because, again, it was the more traditional anthology, you know, standalone episodes. Except last season, I think episodes 1, 2 and the final episode were all linked together, which is interesting the way they did it, you know. But otherwise, yeah, I really look forward to, you know, we have 8 episodes total this season. So we got 6 more. And yeah.
Yeah, banging so far. I really enjoyed it. It took me a while to realize that was Schmidt because it didn't seem like him at first. It was a dimly lit episode too. Excuse me. But the especially towards the end there when he was like hauling off and swearing, you know, what the fuck? I'm gonna fucking void our warranty and shit like that. It was great. But yeah.
What We Do in the Shadows was another solid episode.
The Night Market.
Yeah, I like how they start out with, you know, kind of picking up from last week. Nadja's nightclub's banging thanks to Baby Collins, you know, performances, which is pretty awesome. And then there are Wraith workers there. They form a union. And so they go to the night market, which is like not like the black market, but it's a secret marketplace for, you know, everyone involved in supernatural.
Right.
And I like the fact that she's, you know, not just pride is that she can go there with like no money or, you know, trade something for something and trade to get what she wants eventually.
Yes. I could see you doing that. That was a very you thing.
It really is. Yeah, it kind of is. And I liked her, how in the end she kind of got what she wanted and then thought she had her leverage against the Wraiths. And but it backfired. And finally, she just gave in to their demands. So I thought I liked the continuation of her story throughout the episode with this. And then in her cut is Nando and Guillermo at the familiar fights. It was basically like a not pit fighter, but fight club type thing, but it's just familiars fighting, except they're terrible at fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nandor is overheard by another vampire saying that his familiar could destroy the other familiars. By the way, the familiars lose and they die when they lose. They're killed.
Yes.
So Guillermo gets lured in there, but he refuses to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But he wins all dodging. He wins all his fights through other methods. And doesn't kill anyone until he's forced to fight the vampire pit fight winner. And then Nandor's like, oh, you know what? He's going to challenge Guillermo because he's trying to protect him. Because either Guillermo's going to die or has to kill a vampire. And they don't want him to kill a vampire in public because then they'll know he's a vampire slayer. And, you know, that'll be the end of it.
Right.
So they have a Peter and the Chicken-esque fight. Where Guillermo keeps accidentally killing other vampires, and I love the guy doing the commentary that's like, oh, hey, and then my friend's dead now.
Yeah. Because it should have been simple. You know, Nandor was like, hey, I'm going to pretend to kill you, and he's like, okay. And he's like, because we both know that I could kill you. And Guillermo's like, actually, I mean, last time we tussled, I took you down. And he's like, yeah, well, you cheated. And he's like, I didn't cheat. And so they're like, they're both trying to protect their own pride, and they end up actually fighting.
Yeah, because their egos get too big for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, Nandor does pretend to break Guillermo's neck so he can be the victor and get them both out of there in one piece.
Because Guillermo actually gets the upper hand on him and he's about to stab him.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. That's right. And Nando was like, fine, just kill me. I'm so embarrassed anyways.
Yep. I love how we got to see his wife-to-be for like 5 seconds because she's like, I'm so excited. We're going to the night market. It's not often that I get to leave the house, but, you know, going to the night market. As she's talking, he's back there with the gin whispering to him. And she's like, and I've decided that I'm staying home and don't want to go after all. And he's like, oh, no, that's terrible.
I forgot that scene, but you're right. Yeah.
Now, I want to ask your opinion on this. So Laszlo has been going out of his way with young Colin to try to make him more interesting and make him not a like drain leech energy vampire type.
He wants him to be cool.
Right. Do you feel, but so like this episode, he kept breaking his immersion over fairy tales and such. You know, he's like, oh, you want to see fairies? And he opens up a dumpster and they're living in shit. And, you know, he talks to him about the real story behind Red Riding Hood and stuff like that. So by the end, he's like, well, why don't I read you one of your fairy tales? And he's like, actually, could you read me one of your grown-up books? And it's fucking boring and dry. And Laszlo's like, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. Do you think he's actually inadvertently turning him into an energy vampire who is boring as fuck?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
I think he doesn't even realize he's doing it. And he's putting him on that path. You know, the kid actually has some little bits of interest here and there, and he's squashing those out of him and making him boring and bland and dumb. Oh,
It's still a fun show.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's an amazing show.
We got the Orville and Westworld and Umbrella Academy.
Correct. How many episodes of Westworld did you watch?
I feel like I watched at least two, but I can't remember what number I'm up to. Let's see here. Let me find the list.
Sure.
I've watched Generation Loss. And 4 and 5.
Okay. Yeah. 4 and 5 were the ones that I watched. We had a brand new one yesterday, but
yeah,
no, we're not ready for that. Generation Loss is episode 4. That's the one that I had watched last week, but you had watched 3. So I held on to it. So yes. I'm a little rusty on that one. You're going to have to take the lead on it.
Christina, AKA,
this was the fuck one.
Yeah. AKA Dolores, is set up on a date with Teddy. And this is what we find about the parasite to infect humans to allow them to be controlled by sound. Basically, this is like a mindfuck one throughout the whole thing.
They did the same thing that they did last season, which was basically saying, oh, by the way, you've been watching multiple timelines.
Yeah. So we have Caleb and Charlotte. Charlotte, his daughter, and you have Maeve, and we see them going to rescue his daughter, right? Not Charlotte. Charlotte's the
Frankie.
Frankie. We see him go rescue Frankie in episode 3, but then episode 4, basically we find out that we're seeing Maeve and Caleb 23 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dead.
Yeah.
And they have Charlotte captured, but not really. She's doing one of those interview things with him because Caleb's a host.
Yep.
And
the Maeve one that we've been seeing.
Yes. And Maeve is dead. And Maeve is in the ground there.
In the Badland area.
Yeah, yeah. She got buried in the sand. She sacrificed herself to stop William. and got buried, but not blown up, just buried in the sand. But she had been wounded. And this is the weapon in the desert that Bernard was trying to find. And as we turned out, it's adult Frankie that's with Bernard trying to find, because she thinks her dad's body's there. She wants to find her dad's body.
Right.
So that's all these big reveals at once happening. And it's done very confusing, but brilliantly. Confusing to explain, but brilliant to watch as they're swooping back and forth and everything. And
but yeah. Also, I couldn't help but be a little disappointed because they already did this last season. You know, they did the same thing last season where they were like, wahaha, they ripped it back and you went, oh, so every scene that we've seen Bernard in, some of them were in the future, some of them were in the present, some of them were in the past. Like, oh, this is creepy and brilliant. And then they did it again in this one. You're like, okay, guys, time for a new trick. Like, you're right. It was brilliantly done and it was confusing. But at the same time, I didn't want them to just do that again.
Yeah, sometimes they do go to the well one too many times.
Yeah. Yeah, so essentially there was the timeline where, you know, Maeve and Caleb were fighting the good fight and trying to rescue his daughter, and it turns out that, you know, that was a host that unleashed those flies on him, so that something about that being a virus that the humans carry that allows them to be controlled. Like you said, it's a little confusing. But then we get to flash forward and find out that in the future, it's over. Like, Dolores inside of what's her name's body, Charlotte Hale's body, has won. Like, she erected her tower. The hosts overpopulate the world. They're the majority of the population. She has William in a machine, a Vitruvian machine, down in a basement so that, you know, she can control the clone of him. She's keeping him alive. You know, she has won. And she shows Caleb all this. She's like, yeah, you're now a host. And, you know, you died 23 years ago and I keep you around and wah, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, it was a confusing episode, but, you know, I get where they were going. I get the cool reveal. That was just my big gripe with it, was that I wasn't that excited about this season anyway. Like, I didn't jump when I heard that season 4 was starting up. It wasn't like, oh my God, thank God, I'm so excited to get back to it.
Like, I know, I was more along the lines of like, oh shit, that's still a thing.
Yeah. So when they then go back to the well a second time for this, you know, big reveal, it makes me say, well, maybe I wasn't that far off.
Yep.
So then we have episode 5, which Zhuangzi.
Yep.
And this is where it gets even more weird. Now in this future world, we've got outsiders, which are humans that exist outside of the virus, outside of the control, and they're kind of fighting back. Christina, which is Dolores's body, but she's mapped as Christina, talks to Teddy again. And he's apparently sentient and is telling her to look around, that, you know, reality isn't what she thinks it is. She can't see the tower. He's like, look over there. What do you see? She's like, oh, I can't see anything. There's nothing there, but the tower is there. So she can't see it. But he basically shows her that she is a god here. She can control the people. She's not just writing narratives for this game or the games that she's doing. She's actually writing the scripts for the world, and that she can control them by thought, like Dolores always could, like, yeah, Maeve could. And then, like, her boss is giving her some shit at work, and he starts to come at her with finger guns. And she tells him to stop. And then it's interesting because she narrates it like you would narrate a story. She's like, you know, he stepped away from me. He turned around and went back to his home with his wife. And he does it. Like, So that's an interesting twist on it.
Yeah, she just can't tell him what to do.
Right.
She said she has to narrate it.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing, because Charlotte is also one of the people there, if you will. And she, well, Dolores is now Charlotte. And so she is trying
Christina.
To... Christina. God, I'll get it right someday. There's too many. Like, aren't they calling other Dolores Chrissy as well? Like, there's Christine. Yeah, yeah, you have so Christine, Christina, Charlotte. Like, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
How many out here?
Yeah, so the Charlotte body is actually Dolores's mind.
Correct.
And then the Dolores body is Christina's mind.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just a repressed Dolores.
But either way, they meet up for lunch, and she's, like, why suspicious of her as far as, like, you know, what she has and hasn't done. And it's really kind of weird.
Yeah, she asks her about this new guy that she's seeing, and she's like, oh, I can't really talk about it. And the Charlotte version is like, I have ways of making people tell me what I want to know. And it's supposed to be, like, a friendly conversation. But it's anything but. She's basically like, I will fucking get you to tell me. I can control you. And Christina's like, nah, haha, well, we had some fun. Anyway, let's talk about other things. Very awkward interface. I don't know.
But anyhow, she, like you said, goes, she finds the, after she, her boss... She makes her boss go home. She sees like a door she didn't see before. She goes into it. She sees like the whole world she's created. She's talking to the computer. She sees Teddy at the end and they talk. And then we also have all these other outliers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Bernard's group that was with that part of the rebellion. And then the other part of the rebellion is there to find this outlier, this woman who can now see things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting.
Yeah. It's almost to the point where there's too many plot lines going on. I'm glad that this episode basically stayed in the, I guess you'd say future. Like, are we calling it the present or the future?
I guess maybe it's present.
So it stayed in the one timeline. It didn't
This is in the future, because I feel like the only other timeline we have was Caleb and Maeve 23 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's been rectified now. That's done. So we just have the current timeline this episode was on. But who knows? We might go back to the other timeline at some point.
Right.
So.
Yeah. What have we got? We've got three episodes left. And honestly, at this point, like, I'm starting to feel like Lost. You know, the first couple of seasons were so good and so compelling. And then it started getting to the point where they were just trying to be smarter than they deserve to be. And I started losing interest. You know, this episode ends with one of the William hosts going down and talking to himself. You know,
yeah,
talking
to
the original William.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a very interesting conversation where they basically had a little back and forth, and the original William's like, you know, you created this world, and he's like, no, it's her world. And he's like, yeah, you might want to check your facts there. And so I think he's sowing a little dissension there. The outliers are an interesting thing. Like, we met one of them right in the beginning of the episode because it was weird. Like, was she human or was she a host? Because
I think all the outliers are human.
That's what I thought too.
The control parasite's no longer working on them.
Right. That's the impression that I got, but they made it weird because they were talking about controlling her. But she basically was like, I won the game and I got my prize and I wanted to do this. And they fucking killed her, you know, because she was, I don't know. It's confusing. I'm not going to pretend that I've got all the answers to it. It's enjoyable to a point, but honestly, I wasn't excited about coming into it, and I'm not like chomping at the bit to go behind the scenes and figure out all the stuff that I'm not understanding.
It's a little convoluted.
It is.
That's part of the biggest problem, is that it's just a little convoluted.
The first season was great when we had the park and the hosts gaining sentience and wanting to fight back. That was great. Yeah. Yeah. The second season, when it was about like breaking out and getting into the real world, okay, that was cool. You know, they're rising up. And then it just started like, okay, now we're in the real world and they're going to try to, you know, fight back against the AI and they're going to try to take over. And now they're like, okay, now they've taken over the real world and humans are controlled by a parasite. And, you know, it's getting less interesting.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. I agree with that.
So that's it. That's what I'll say about that.
Well, we got the Orville, or do you want to talk about Umbrella Academy?
Let's do Umbrella last.
Okay.
So the Orville, we had two episodes to watch because we decided we were going to catch up because we realized we were an episode behind. Now this show, so early on this season, we were like, oh yeah, they're revisiting all their old stuff. And, you know, they're kind of bringing back plot lines that were done in earlier seasons. Maybe for continuity, maybe because they, you know, just had to do something when they moved to Hulu. And now this show feels more and more like what Discovery is doing versus Strange New Worlds. Like these past several episodes from about, I mean, all of it's been going on, Tale of Two Topas, Twice in a Lifetime. But once we hit From Unknown Graves, it's really cemented in that they are just doing the Discovery thing. And they're just doing like one long running commentary story throughout. These two episodes here, Midnight Blue and Domino, might just as well have been labeled as a two-parter. You know, Midnight Blue, basically they go to Havina's sanctuary. So that, you know, they can, they're trying to shore up all of their allies for the war against the Kalons, which I almost just called them Cylons again. And it turns out that she's been breaking the rules. You know, the rules are that she's supposed to not be interfering with regular Mauklin society, and she's
they're been not supposed having to be her, smuggling any more women, any more babies, female babies
and,
into there.
And she's been actively doing that.
Yeah.
Then she actively recruits Topa to help her, you know, a child, because she's like, you have a unique position where you're on a Union ship and you could get me information and you could spread the word to others out there that, you know, this is what we're doing. And the kid's like, yeah, I'll do that, because she had just, you know, professed her love or tried to profess her love for Gordon. And he's like, oh, dude, you're a little sister to me. Like, she's a child. And he's absolutely right to kind of shoot her down, but gently. So she's feeling vulnerable and she's feeling like she doesn't really have a purpose. And then she meets her hero, you know, the first one to stand up as a female Mauklin and stood up for her when she was still just a baby. So, yep. You know, she's inspired and she wants to help. And that's great. But then she gets kidnapped because, you know, the Mauklins that are there know what's going on. They know that this woman's screwing with them, you know, Vina. And they decide that they're going to take Topa and try to get information on what's going on with, you know, Havina and her group. And they torture the hell out of her to get that information. Not seeming to care because, you know, she's female. So it doesn't matter her age. She's female. So she's less than, she is trash. Yeah. So they absolutely destroy her. Meanwhile, the union representatives are all meeting and they're all talking about like what's going on with this. Do we need to do an investigation? And the Mauklin ambassador is like, look, Havina is breaking the rules. We're not breaking the rules. And they're like, well, you may have kidnapped somebody. He goes, well, we may not have.
Yeah, you can't prove any of that. I'm sorry. Hold on one second.
Sure.
I got to tell them when Brendan's in the room, he's going to be the one, he's going to be my contact, and that you don't need to call me, but I don't want to be rude about it. So, yeah, he is saying we have evidence that she has betrayed our agreement. You have no evidence that we've done anything, and yet you want to investigate us.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, he's lying through his teeth, but he's not wrong.
Nope.
In a court of law, he's not wrong.
And it becomes very heated politically, because she does, they convince her to stand up through, creative use of a hologram of Dolly Parton, I might add, wonderful cameo there. But they basically convince Evina to admit that she did this so that things can move forward and they could investigate them. And it doesn't go so well. Gordon kind of loses his shit. Yeah, I don't even know what he was doing in the room when they had that private meeting, you know, with the ambassadors and the admirals. But he basically gets up and he does make a very valid point. He's like, every time these guys do something wrong, you tell them not to, and they say, we're going to do it anyway. And then they do it anyway. And it's bullshit that you keep turning a blind eye and that you keep letting them get away with this shit. And they all tell him, you know, shut the fuck up. You're going to screw us. But I was there for it. You know, I vibed with him. I believe that he is absolutely correct that these guys are bullies and everyone just kowtows to them because they're like, we need their military might to fight the Kalons. And
you know, one of my big issues with the Orville is I think Seth MacFarlane's a brilliant writer. He's an amazing storyteller. He's extremely funny, but he's not that great at playing a serious role. And these last few episodes, he has been had to be serious like the entire time, except for the one where they pretended that he wasn't the captain to try and get on the good side of the all-female warriors, if you will, where he did comedy. But otherwise, he's just Seth MacFarlane's not a good stern look giver. You know what I mean?
No, he's not. And every time something goes wrong and him and Adrian Pilecki stand up and walk forward, you know, on the bridge and they stare at the screen, I'm like, this is cringy. This is awkward. You need to stop doing this, both of you. Like I'm not taking either one of you seriously. I mean, at least with Kelly, she comes across as a bit of a badass. Like, she can. She's gotten the shit kicked out of her. She's got the scars to prove it. He's the pretty boy sitting in the chair that cannot, you know, command attention. I think that's what it is. His face is too pretty, and I don't mean, like, attractive. I mean, like, it looks like the face of somebody who hasn't done a day of real work in their life. You know, he doesn't have the grizzled features that would be the stern look of somebody.
He's not Anson Mount.
No, he's not even Paul Wesley.
No.
Like, Paul Wesley was given some goddamn good Kirk looks.
He certainly was. So.
And, Seth MacFarlane just doesn't have that in him. You're right.
Yep.
Speaking of, I forgot to say this last time. I want to say this now because I think this is a travesty. William Shatner was at Comic-Con recently, and he did an interview with Kevin Smith. That in and of itself is a travesty. But he made comments. Kevin Smith asked him about what he thinks about the new Star Trek stuff, like Discovery, and Shatner shat upon all of them. He said that he worked closely with Gene Roddenberry on the original Star Trek, and Gene would be turning in his grave if he saw what they had done to this franchise, and that it was abhorrent and that they had no business doing this, and he hates them. He hates them all. He condones them all. Or condemns them all. Sorry.
Okay. I can understand him saying that about the J.J. Abrams movies. I enjoyed them thoroughly, but I could see him saying that about them.
Yep.
Because they did turn the universe upside down.
Yes.
I could 100% see him saying that about Discovery. Because I'm just not there for it. But Strange New Worlds, come on!
Strange New Worlds.
Picard,
even Lower Decks has its charm and it has its place in the Star Trek. They're actually next season. There's going to be a crossover episode between Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks. They haven't said how much of it's going to be animated versus live action, but Jack Quaid, who plays the main character on Lower Decks, he showed up and crashed the Strange New Worlds Comic-Con panel, him and his co-star, because they're going to be crashing Enterprise. And that's fucking great. And so for Shatner to, like, shit upon that, I lost a lot of respect for him right there.
He just sounds like a curmudgeonly old man, or he sounds like every professional wrestler who thinks their generation of wrestling is better than the new or current generation of wrestling.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yep, I could.
At the same time, William Shatner is 91. He did just go to space.
Yep, that's great. And he was the original Captain Kirk. Mark Hamill was the original Luke Skywalker, and he's done nothing but praise and boost Star Wars in every way, shape, and form.
Yes.
You know?
That's true.
Anyway, that was just that popped into my head as I was talking about this. But yeah, so Midnight Blue was a rough episode, and it actually saw the biggest shakeup we've seen in a long time at the end, which was that the Mauklands withdrew from the Union and they went over to the Krill homeworld, which was just taken over by what's her name there, and formed a union with her.
Well, did they do that in that episode or the next episode?
No, I'm pretty sure it was at the end of Midnight Blue.
Because I feel like the end of Midnight Blue ended with I feel like Midnight Blue ended with Bordas coming back and they renounced their Mauklin.
No, that actually happened in the that was the beginning of the next episode.
I thought that was the end of that episode with them sitting down and having the meal together.
Bordas came back. But I think because Kelly was invited to the dinner.
Yeah, and I thought that's how Midnight Blue ended. Let's see here. Bros and Clyde renounced their Mauklin citizenship. And then, yeah, the beginning of episode 9, Domino, after their expulsion from the Planetary Union, the Mauklins formed an alliance with the Krill.
Huh.
But even then, they can't do it because the Mauklin's like, well, we clearly will lead this alliance because you're inferior females.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doomed from the start.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, you make a good point because I forgot about that, too. Yeah. Bordas shows back up because he basically heard that Topol was taken away and tortured for information. And so as soon as he heard that, he got on a shuttle and went right to the Orville. And he was like, he apologized to her first, which was the right thing to do, and basically said, you know, that all he ever wanted was what was right for her, and that he now realized that the same people who had the backwoods thinking that he had are the ones that did this, so he needs to grow because he doesn't want to be intolerant like they were. And then he apologizes to, what's his name there? Bordas. Yeah, Clyden apologizes to Bordas, and they become a happy family again. They even bring Kelly in because, you know, she was the one that kicked Clyden off. And, yeah, she gets to come and join them for dinner, and they're all one big happy family.
Yeah. Well, of course, they did tease while Kelly and Bordas were going to rescue Topa. They did tease, like, a little bit of romance-y. Maybe they were going to kiss even. So they did
that.
Oh yeah, like they were like leaning in close, and you thought they were gonna kiss because he was helping her with her arm that got injured, her shoulder that was injured, and oh yeah, that was happening. That was a thing. So
then we have Domino, and Domino was essentially a movie in episode form.
Yeah, and did they jump the shark on this one?
A lot. So it was an hour and 18 minutes, and it opened, like you said, with the alliance between those two. But somehow the Union now has a weapon that can just straight up destroy Kalons, wipe out ships.
Yeah, Charlie and Isaac developed this device. Again, every episode is we can't lose the Mocklins because the Mocklins military and we can't defeat them and blah, 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 blah. And what appears to be a matter of a day after the Mocklins are kicked out of the Union and then the Mocklins go to the Krill, now all of a sudden the Union has a weapon.
It's the same way that a couple episodes back they had a time travel device. Just look what I built in my off time, a time travel device. Yep. And now suddenly, they're just like, oh, by the way, we built this thing. And it's essentially a pylon the size of a person that when they detonate it, it sends out waves based around the ship that completely, and I don't mean like, oh, it shuts down all their systems. Like the ships, the Kalons, all of them just explode.
Yep.
And this isn't a, oh, we can use it once and then it has to recharge for 48 hours kind of super weapon. No, they're fucking firing it off left, right, and center at one point. There's like,
and it doesn't affect any Union ships at all.
Nope. And it doesn't affect Isaac because he severed himself from the Kalon hive mind.
And when I started this episode, I was just like, what in the did I miss an episode? Like stopped it and I had to go back and look because it's like literally right at the, all of a sudden they're just like blowing up Kalons. I'm like, is this a simulation? Are we going to get like 2 weeks ago?
The same thing.
Yeah.
Because like who was it that was in the simulator that was trying to like, was that? Yeah.
It was Topa.
Yeah.
Boy Topa. But yeah, like I just I was so confused and caught off guard and just like, wait a second. I'm missing out here. There's something fishy going on.
Yeah. There was no rhyme or reason. It just they pulled it out of their ass. I don't know. It wasn't even like, oh, in multiple episodes they were talking about this. Like this came out of the way.
Appeared, yeah. And of course, like everyone just wants to go set it up. Oh, we can set up to blast like tens of thousands of meters array. Well, let's just go wipe them all out. And, you know, you got Captain who's like, oh, wait a second. Let's talk to the Kalons and let's, you know, because we saw that they could be humanized. And like there's great arguments like, yeah, when you had one like, neuroscientist who reprogrammed them. Do we have enough neurosciences to reprogram billions of Kalons? Like, everyone made great arguments as to why they should just wipe the Kalons out, because the Kalons are just trying to wipe out every living, organism, humanoid being.
And every instead, biologic.
Every biologic, thank you. And instead, like, you know, Captain is just like, oh, maybe we can, like, not do that. Maybe we can just go, like, show them we can wipe out everybody and then get them to stop fighting with us.
Yeah. 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 The whole, you know, we're going to show you that this will kill you all.
Yeah.
See what we have? Our weapon is bigger. It's the nuclear deterrent thing.
Yes. And it works. But the Kalons are like, don't worry, though. We'll find us. We'll have a truce for now, but then we'll find out a way around your weapon and we'll destroy you all then.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Kalons just straight up say it.
Yep.
And Charlie's just like, yeah, good try, but I've programmed this bad boy so that if you try something like that, it automatically detonates.
Because I feel like people say stuff like that in shows and movies and books because that's the easy explanation. That's them saying, you know, you can't do it because I programmed it. It's like the whole if you don't do what I say and I don't check in within 24 hours, then this stuff's going to get mailed to every news outlet in the world. Yeah.
But this
sounds good. But it would be a pain in the ass to put together.
This was most definitely like a very crammed together multiple episode story arc that was crammed into one extended episode. Or as like you said, like a feature movie within the series. But then again, Midnight Blue was also an hour and a half long. It was longer than Domino.
Yeah. And honestly, like both of them felt a little heavy-handed with the stuff. This one especially. I can't believe the number of different things that they did here. You know, we started off with the Krill and the Mocklin's like, oh yeah, here's how we're going to form our alliance. And then suddenly they have an alliance and they've got a fleet of ships around this, you know, research station because we've also introduced the fact that Ted Danson's Admiral Perry decided to take it upon himself to send a couple of high-ranking officers to steal the device and take it to the Krill and the Mocklins because he's like, you guys will use it. We won't.
Yeah, you won't hesitate to use this, and yet we will. And so she brings it to the Krill, and the Krill's like, oh, thanks, pal, and then kills him.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah. He's going to go back and tell them about us. That's okay because they can't do anything about it anyway.
Well, he found out about the Krill-Mocklin Alliance.
Yeah.
And so now we are – and so then immediately, the Union makes an alliance with the Kalons to fight the Mocklins and the Krill.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
they basically go to them and they go, hey, you remember that weapon that we had that we could kill you with? We don't have it anymore. But wait, don't shoot us. Just hear us out.
Yeah.
You know, we want to go get it back so that it can't kill all of you because they're probably going to set it off and kill all of you. So we should help each other.
And they're like, okay, your logic is solid.
Mm-hmm. But they're like, yeah, your logic is solid, but we're basically going to help you to get it back. And then we're probably going to take it because we don't want you to have it.
Right. But of course that doesn't, we have a big battle, of course, between.
Okay.
Between,
no, the battle was insane. Like it was fought in space. It was fought in the atmosphere. It was fought in the bunker. Like this was some Star Wars shit.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. Actually, I'll give him credit on that one.
Everybody's zooming in and out. Like at one point they were like aiming for the structural pylons, just like, you know, diving through the trench in A New Hope. And there was so much shit going on.
Yeah, there was a lot. No doubt. But I'm still there for it.
Yeah, it was still very enjoyable. But then again, the convenient writing that we were talking about. You know, we get Kelly facing off against, is it Talia?
Yeah, the Krill leader there, Talay or whatever her name is.
Talaya. So she faces off against her. They have a big old fight. Kelly gets her face stove up pretty bad, but manages to capture her. Isaac saves Charlie, you know, from one of the... one of the Mocklin researchers goes to pull a gun and shoot her, and he shoots the gun out of his hand, but then lets the Mocklin live. Like one of the Kalon Prime Kalon Primary, gunned them all down as they tried to escape, except for that one who stayed. And then when he did that, Isaac let him go. I don't know where Kalon Primary was though. Like he should have gunned this guy down, but anyway. Getting back to the convenient writing, she says that, you know, they've locked it out, and basically the Mocklins are like, oh, it would take days to shut it down, and the cycle has already begun, and we can't deprogram it. She's like, they're right, they can't, but we could overload the core and blow the whole thing up, but it's going to blow up basically this whole research center and part of the planet, so you guys should get out, and I can't send a remote signal to it. I'm going to have to die here.
Yeah, which is a good way to end her character, really, after she gets, you know, after her and Isaac are friends now.
Yep.
So she sacrifices herself, and they capture Talia, and she's going to stand trial for war crimes, but she won't give Ed their daughter.
Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly, oh, my God. Yeah. When he was like, you are a piece of work.
Yeah.
And it's true, because he was like, she needs to have a parent. Tell me where she is. And she's like, oh, if you release me, I'll arrange that. You can have her. And he's like, wow, you're using her as a bargaining chip even at this point.
Of course she is.
What is wrong with you?
Kalons are offered an alliance with the Union and maybe a membership, and they accept, so the battle's over.
But they still say that it's a temporary thing.
And, of course, Isaac is going to do Charlie's eulogy at the memorial.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think we just have one more episode, do we not?
We do, yes.
Which I'm not upset about, and they haven't said that if it's going to be coming back for a fourth season or not.
No, they haven't.
But it is going to Disney Plus.
Right. Yeah, the next episode is aptly titled Future Unknown.
Which is very true.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that a novella got released.
Interesting.
Yeah, let's see here. That one episode was not filmed, called Sympathy for the Devil. So he made it a novel. Seth MacFarlane did and released it. Apparently it takes place between Midnight Blue and Domino. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Which would kind of maybe fill in the holes to how they got that weapon all of a sudden.
Mm.
Yeah. So. Anyhow. Umbrella Academy.
Umbrella Academy. So this ended up being, what, 4 episodes?
Yeah, and it was a lot.
And I honestly don't think we're going to be able to separate out, like, you know, this happened in this episode, or this happened in this episode. You feel free to try if you want.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to try that. So let's see here. So we have episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Yep. So you have Auf Wiedersehen, Wedding at the End of the World, Seven Bells, and Oblivion.
All right, so we find out what happened to Lila after everything went wrong. She went to West Berlin. She got a hidden briefcase. She meets Trudy. She's in a punk band. And that's where we find out she recruited Stan to go mess with Diego.
Right, because that was Trudy's kid. Yep. And Trudy's the kind who just fucks off for a couple weeks at a time with the bass player.
Yep.
And leaves him alone too. So she's like, hey, let's go mess with this guy.
Let's see what else in this episode. Oh, this is where Reginald and Klaus figure out his powers, which is he actually dies and comes back to life. And so in a very comical scene, he gets killed repeatedly by vehicles where nobody calls the police, apparently, on stretch of road.
That was my first comment as well, was why has nobody called the police? Why has nobody called an ambulance?
Yeah.
Why aren't there wreckers out there towing these vehicles away because they got stove up? How is Reginald not getting, like, arrested for sitting there and causing all of these accidents? The scene was funny, but at the same time, from a realistic standpoint, it was fucking impossible.
Yeah, it was absurd. It
just, and this is a show about people with superpowers. So
yeah.
To say it's impossible says something.
Yeah, it really wasn't going to work out properly.
Mm-hmm. How cool, though, when we discover Klaus's real powers and his, connection to the other side, etc., he became a cooler character. Like, I always thought it was weird that his whole thing was, oh, he could talk to ghosts when his shoes are off. And that was pretty much it. And, like, he didn't use that at all this season. So I was like, why is Klaus even around?
Yeah, we really get to see what his powers can really do and what he can really do. And he takes him to the graveyard to help him get over his fear of ghosts. And he can actually exorcise ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, Klaus went from being a joke character to one of the most powerful ones.
Yeah, exactly. So, but let's see what else happens in this episode. Oh, they think that they stopped the cubelets.
And they trapped it
in the cube kid from the umbrella. Yeah, from the
Sparrows.
Sparrow, there we go. Swallows Academy, the Sparrows, yeah.
Yeah, because they do a whole big thing. Bomb comes down with a flamethrower.
Five has got to kill her.
Yep. And they do a whole thing where, you know, Sloane uses her gravity powers to kind of compress it. We get Lila and Victor both using the sound waves to vibrate the frequencies and keep them stable until Christopher can condense himself around it and contain it in a box. Which is then undone by one tiny little tinkle of a glass.
Yep, little cheers action. Christopher explodes, kills Faye. The Cubelix is enormous and consumes the house and starts consuming the world around them, except for the Hotel Obsidian.
Mm-hmm.
Also we have horseshit going on between Victor and Harlan and everything else. Sloan and Luther proposes to Sloan, which leads to the wedding at the end of the world, where we see Reginald Hargraves, who he finds the secret doorway up in the sky. So he has a hotel built up to the doorway, and that's mm-hmm. the door that is in the Buffalo Room.
Yes.
And once the hotel is open and everything, he sends a team of soldiers down there, and they are all annihilated.
Yes. Yes, they are.
But this whole episode was basically we're watching the Cubelets consume everything around them, the city, the world, and everybody. The whole episode is Luther and Sloane's wedding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the different. So a lot of it is interpersonal stuff because they're all stuck inside the hotel. So it's the interpersonal stuff of. Yep. You know, Ben isn't invited to the bachelor party because he's an asshole and everyone hates yep. it. But he takes offense to it. And he's like, well, I didn't get invited. He doesn't. He says that he didn't care about getting invited. And Sloan's like, you care about nothing else but getting invited. You've got Victor and Allison fighting over the fact that, you know, Allison decided to kill Harlan because he killed all their moms. And that was the right thing to do. And Victor's like, I could have helped him. And she's like, no, you couldn't have. Like, you yep. couldn't help him then, and you couldn't help him now, and, you know, I'm the only one that seems to be trying to put the universe right. And Victor says, yeah, you're only doing this because you lost your daughter and Ray. You know,
not wrong.
Nope. Klaus is trying to convince everybody to let Dad come to the wedding because he's a different dad, and they're all like, no, he can go fuck himself. Like, there was just so much interpersonal stuff going on between this one and kind of the next one, too. But.
Yeah, so a lot of this is, at the end of the wedding episode, Five sees Reginald talking to someone and making a deal with him in the Buffalo suite. So the next episode is kind of trying to figure out who that is a lot.
I nailed it. The first night, like when I saw Allison. Him, I was like, oh, it's Allison. But yeah. I thought he was saying, I can't do it without you because she was going to rumor everybody to join him.
Right. So this episode is them basically trying to decide, okay, well, who, you know, he wants them to, he explains what is going on. The Seven Bells, the Guardians, everything else, how this is how we save the world, blah, blah, blah. And then
whoever
they have
created the universe
yeah.
built in a failsafe.
Yeah. So they can restart it or reset it. And he wants the Umbrellas to go and do this. Well, the family, all of them, the two combined. And they vote on it, and they essentially vote the majority to not do anything, just let the world end. Fuck it.
Yeah.
So Reginald kills Luther, pretending the Guardians came and did it to get everybody to go through the secret passageway to go do what he wants, to manipulate everybody to do what he wants to do.
So and, here's a fun little factoid about that.
Yeah.
He says to him, he's like, well, I tried to bring everybody together. Usually a wedding's good for that, but since that didn't work, let's try a funeral. The very first episode of the first season was called We Only See Each Other at Weddings and Funerals.
Yes, I remember. I did go back and saw that. That was pretty freaking awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah. I like that. So, sorry, continue.
No, it's fine. It's fine. So anyways, he gets everyone to go through the tunnel, but then he doesn't let Klaus go in. Because he's like, hey, you helped me get this far, but you're too much of a liability. So, bye. And he leaves them there. So yep. Klaus kills himself.
Yeah, because Oblivion's about to – well, sorry, not Oblivion, but basically the Kugelblitz is about to take him out.
Right.
So he impales himself.
Yeah. And then we're into the last episode, and And, you know, they're all fighting and they eventually figure out what the symbols are and how to do it and yada, 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 and blah, 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 blah. And they work together and hate each other and work together and hate each other and turn on each other and blah, blah, blah. But we see Luther and Klaus in the afterlife. And then Luther's chasing him down.
Which was finally, hilarious.
It was really good. Yeah. And finally, oh, and then like Allison admits she made the deal with Reginald. But they managed to start killing the guardians. Five loses his arm. They kill all the guardians. Oh, no. The one guardian's still alive, but he's going to kill Sloan. And then, because Klaus is now back in the real world, he's alive again. He brings Luther's spirit back. And Luther's spirit stops the last guardian from killing Sloan and temporarily disables him. And then Five figures out the symbols, and then they all jump on the symbols, except Reginald tells Allison not to. And then he tries to reset everything, and he's basically taking the life force of the umbrellas to feed this machine so he can reset the world.
It's the particles inside of them.
Yeah.
He said that the particles inside of them are what fuels the machine.
Yeah.
So this is some very interesting stuff because at the beginning of this season, we got that scene on the South Korean train where the golden particles kind of flew in through and they hit that woman and she suddenly gave birth to, we assume, Ben.
Yeah.
So, you know, the original story was that 42 women simultaneously gave birth all at the same time. Then it became 18 because Harlan killed so many of them.
Right.
So Reginald in both timelines has selected 7. We know that he needed 7 because he needed to have 7 bodies on those platforms or on those marks in order to power this up. So in both timelines, he was literally just trying to get this place powered up so that he could rewrite the universe. Does this mean that he is also the one, because we know he's an alien, does this mean that he's the one who unleashed the particles in the first place? Did he create these superpowered people in order to fulfill what he would consider his destiny of being able to rewrite the universe in his image?
That seems most logical to me.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that seems the most logical to me. Allison stops Hargrove, Reginald, from killing everyone.
Yep.
But then pushes the button herself, and then they're all zapped. And the hotel's gone. There's a statue of Hargreaves there. Luther's alive. He's not an ape man. Five's arms back. Diego's got his fingers back. Sloan's not there. But none of them have their powers.
Right.
Which is rather interesting.
Mm-hmm. And as they all decide to go their own separate ways and live their lives, Luther's going to go find Sloan, and everybody just kind of like fucks off. We pan up, and now at the beginning of episode 10, it was 9 or 10, we got to see Luther's time on the moon. And he was kept up there, but there was like an invisible fence, you know, like for dogs that he couldn't get past. And he didn't know what it was about, but he was just like, oh, whatever. He thought he was just being penned in by Dad. But there was a pod there that had a woman in suspended animation, but it said deceased. And it was like Abigail Hargreaves, which we have to assume, based on the last scene there, was Reginald's wife, air quotes, because we get this panned up scene where we see that all of Manhattan or wherever they are has, you know, Hargreaves Bank, Hargreaves Loan and Trust, Hargreaves Hospital, like everything is his. He owns the world. He is the most influential, powerful person in the entire world. And he's standing there in his skyscraper looking down over them walking out of the, you know, what was the Hotel Oblivion, and the woman walks up and holds his hand, and they kind of cut out at that point.
Did you see the mid-credit scenes?
I only saw one.
Sorry, the mid-credit scene.
Yeah. Which was kind of lame. I mean...
Oh, super lame.
Yeah, it was basically just the same... It looked like the same South Korean train that we started on, but this time Ben was just sitting there reading a book, smiling.
Yeah, but we... Did we see him at the end? Yes, we saw him. And he took off from the rest of them,
Yep. So, if none of them have their powers... They're all normal, but Hargreaves is still the villain. And where is Sloane? How were they born if they weren't created from this, magical concoction of particles floating down and hitting their mothers?
Oh, that's true. That's true.
It raises more questions. I hope two things. I hope that we get another season to explain this. And I'm going to say this and it's going to sound weird, but I hope it's the last season, because this show has done a phenomenal job of ending every season on a major cliffhanger. And I think that I'm ready for it to be done. I think that the story could play out at this point, because now they know that Reginald is the villain. They know that he has been setting this up. And I think that they could wrap it up. They could have one more season to kind of wrap it all up and finish the story and say, ta-da, we're done.
I was just reading one spot that it was renewed for a fourth and most likely final season.
Good. I approve.
Yep. As do I.
All in all, though, very enjoyable. Some of it I could have done without. I felt that the Allison and Victor fights were way annoying and way too much. Lila and Diego was very interesting. They definitely fit the mold of the we're too fucked up to be with normal people, so we'll be with each other. I loved Luther and Sloane together because they're both such... she's very smart. He's not so smart. They kind of complemented each other very well in their innocence and happiness. Mm-hmm. So I genuinely wanted them to succeed. I hope that he does find her.
I enjoyed them together as well.
And that the version of her that he finds is, somebody who still knows him, because that would be sad. And we still don't know what was up with Five. Like, his old self was missing the arm and said, don't save the world. So if he didn't save the world, then how did this version of him lose his arm? Or what happened? If he had abstained and hadn't saved the world, then we would have had an armless version of him in the future. Maybe that version of him escaped. So this time he decided to save the world by stepping on the platform, and that's why he has his arm back and the universe was rewritten. Oh, and let's not forget that because Allison made the deal, she got to have her ideal world too, where not only is her daughter there, who's from present time, but Ray is her husband, who was the husband in the 60s.
Yeah, I saw that too. That's a little screwed up and not fair.
Well, that's why she made the deal with Hargreaves. And for somebody who screwed everybody over every step of the way, he at least kept his word there and said, I told you you'd get your every desire, and here you go. No, it's not cool at all.
Because she's like, I want my daughter from my first marriage, but my husband from my second.
Yeah. And basically, she became one of my most detested characters.
I liked her less and less and less as the season went on.
Yeah. The peak of that was when she mind-fucked Luther and tried to get him to mount her. That was fucked up.
Yeah, that was massively wrong.
Yeah. So is that all the shows?
I think so, yeah.
The missing girl from Livermore Falls has been found. Good.
I know, I had to cancel all their stuff while we were talking.
Oh, gotcha.
You were talking about...
is that why they called?
Yep.
Yep.
You were talking about... A show I think we're talking about Orville.
Oh, okay.
I had to log into the iPod system and cancel the bulletin and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, there was a time when, you know, you would have had employees that could do that for you.
Not anymore.
So what'd you watch for movies?
Well, I watched The Gray Man last week, and you obviously didn't get a chance to watch it.
No, I did not.
I still love it, even though it's not doing great on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
But you also sent me a thing that said that it was, you said that it was, they were going to create a universe for it.
Yeah, which seemed a little odd.
Yeah, but if you watch the movie, it'll make sense.
Okay.
Yep, it'll make sense.
Okay.
Of how they could have not even just Ryan Gosling's character over and over again, but others.
Okay.
So it's almost like they're in a special unit similar to, say, Treadstone.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
But the other movie I did watch this week, Addison and I watched Scream 5.
Wow. Catching right up.
We've watched them all now until the new one comes out in March. I got to say, the experience of watching these films with my daughter has been phenomenal.
Yeah?
Yeah. Watching these movies with her, watching her reactions, listening to her kind of work it out and talk it through. I mean, like, it's just been a spectacular experience. I watched all these movies with Kanan. He just kind of watches the movie kind of silently, except for the, yeah, and oh, that was awesome or whatever. Whereas Addison is getting deep into the mythos, the storylines, the characters, how they're related, how they're connected. Like, it's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
He, when Dewey, have you seen it yet?
Yes.
Okay. I thought so, but I just want to double check. When Dewey's killed.
Yep.
She cried.
Aw.
She was like, they killed Dewey. And I'm watching her, and then she starts wiping her eyes, and like, she's like, I need to get some ice cream. And I had to pause it. She had to take a moment to reflect and just kind of, you know, get back into the zone so she could sit down and watch. But yeah, that upset her terribly.
I can imagine, since, like, for us, we saw those movies years ago and
yes,
kind of made our peace, and we were like, oh, okay, cool, he's back. Oh, wow, that sucks. For her, this has been, you know, a couple of months that she's been watching this character.
Yeah, we saw the first one in 96 when it came out. I saw it in the theaters. And then the most recent one was in 2022. That's 26 years apart. Like,
yeah.
And they did, like, it was like 96, 97, 2000, and then 2011. And then, you know what I mean? So we got kind of like a bang, bang, pause, bang, and then 11 years, and then now another 11 years. So, pardon me. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that it was originally supposed to come out in 2021, but then got delayed because of, you know, fucking COVID.
Yeah.
But that was my movie, and it was a good time.
Nice. Yeah, I double checked. I don't think that I actually watched any movies. But, you know, then again, I watched four episodes of Doctor Who. So,
right.
That kind of.
And I watched two feature length episodes of Orville.
The Orville, yeah, exactly.
All right. News and shit. So,
news and shit.
Well,
not
yeah,
a
you
whole
had,
ton.
Not really. You sent, like I said, you sent the article about the Gray Man. What did you think of Samaritan?
I think it looks cool.
Yeah, I do too.
Sylvester Stallone is a, I want, like, air quotes, retired or hidden superhero. Like, he was a superhero and now he's gone into retirement. People think he's dead and he's just fine with that. Like, he throws garbage around now. Yeah, it looks pretty badass, honestly.
Yeah, it looks pretty damn good. I'm here for it. I'll watch that.
Yep.
Let's see here. Oops. Well, speaking of Stallone, we got some news that a Rocky film franchise expands with a Drago spinoff, you know, featuring Dolph Lundgren and the guy that played his son Drago. And, you know, Rocky wasn't going to appear in it, but Sylvester Stallone was an executive producer. And, you know, it's just been greenlit, so there's not a whole lot of news about it or information or whatever. But yeah, and then a day later or whatever, Sylvester Stallone slamming Dolph Lundgren, calling Irvin Winkler an old parasite, him and his kids sucking him dry, you know, like blah blah blah. Like, so Sylvester
Stallone, give me back the rights to my film.
Yeah, does not support this, and in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. I'm glad that it came out a day later, you know, and it wasn't one of those like a year down the road and he's like, oh, I never supported this. Like, he was right there. Like, no, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree with him though. I mean, he's certainly entitled to his opinion. I think he's a great guy, but you know, and
I think he's upset.
I don't know the whole story.
I think he's upset. This is a rights thing. He doesn't have the rights to the movie that he wrote, to the characters he created.
Yeah.
Irvin Winkler does. And his kid, he has nothing, like he can't leave his kids the residuals to it. He can't do anything. And Irvin Winkler's, you know, like surviving off these characters. Like, so I get it.
So he's mad at Irvin Winkler, not mad at the Drago spinoff.
Well, yes and no, because like he created Drago. Dolph Lundgren out of obscurity with his character, and pulled them back out of obscurity when he put obscurity. We put him in the Expendables, and then wrote Drago into the new Creed movie. You know what I mean? Like,
what do you
feels
mean?
Like he feels like that.
He was Flash Gordon, man.
Dolph Lundgren could have, at the very least, given him a heads up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I get that.
Dude, I'm so freaking pumped for this. John Bernthal back as the Punisher.
He's and gonna officially.
He's going to be in the reboot. He's going to be in Daredevil.
Daredevil and then, Reborn.
Yep. Oh my God. My cat's licking my toes. I keep waiting for him to bite him. And it's freaking me out because he's doing that soft touch without his claws with his paws. That tickles a little bit. Whew, sorry. And then we're getting another season of The Punisher.
Yeah. So I have a feeling that we're going to start getting more announcements. You know, they've been talking a lot about Jessica Jones and whether or not we're going to see her come back. Nothing that I've heard so far about Luke Cage or Iron Fist, unfortunately.
I'll be honest, dude. Like, quite frankly, we're getting Charlie Cox as Daredevil and we're getting John Bernthal as The Punisher, and they can recast the rest for all I care.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones, I struggled with Luke Cage. I struggled with
Iron Fist. We loved the second season, and Iron then they canceled it on us.
Yes, Iron Fist second season was phenomenal. I did really enjoy the Defenders overall.
Mm-hmm.
But the Defenders, the Iron Fist that we got in the Defenders is the Iron Fist we got in the second season of Iron Fist. So that helped.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep. But yeah, I'm so excited to see John Bernthal back as the Punisher. Like that's his character.
Absolutely.
If you spill that water, cat, sorry. He likes to knock his water dish over and spill the water all over the floor, then lick it off the floor. So we got a new heavy water dish, so we can't do that, but he's figured out how to do it.
Nice.
He's a jerk.
He's clever.
So move the water dish to the lower part of the floor, please and thank you. Sorry, everybody. I just keep talking off track today.
We got the sad news that Nichelle Nichols passed away at 89.
Yeah. Yep.
That's tragic. Lieutenant Uhura, pioneer for, you know, black women on film.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just a nice person in general. Like, yeah. I still remember her her episode on Comic Book Guys when they got her an Uhura action figure and then they were going to charge her like full price. And they're like, dude, this is fucking Uhura. Go fuck yourself. You're not charging her for this. You're giving it to her.
Well, wasn't it they're blaming Ming for that?
Yeah, they were trying to blame Ming, and no, it was fucking Walter. He was like, yeah, I can give it to you for like $300, and she's like, excuse me? She's like, this is me. Like, this is who I am. Yeah, he was going to try to charge her for it.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
MGM has lost the rights to Tomb Raider. I didn't even realize that this was a thing, that they were, you know, trying to retain the rights or whatever. But yeah, they no longer have the rights to Tomb Raider. Alicia Vikander is out as Lara Croft. Looks like that franchise is dead. And, you know, they don't have to bring it back. Whoever gets the rights, you could just put it, mothball it. Like, Tomb Raider is kind of a dead thing anyway. They had the original run of the games, which, you know, were famous for the big polygon breastises. Then you had the Angelina Jolie movies, which were mediocre at best.
I didn't care for any of them. I thought they were terrible.
Yeah, they weren't good Tomb Raider movies. They weren't good Indiana Jones movies. They were just like, meh. So then they rebooted the series as video games, and they were phenomenal. They did three of them. They were great. And then they kind of died. Like, we haven't seen another one in forever. Same thing with the movies. They rebooted those based on the rebooted games. And now those can just die. Like, Tomb Raider's time has passed, for now at least. Just let it die, and it'll be okay. Nobody needs to say, oh, we've got this. Now we've got to churn out something half-assed. Nope, it's good. Just stop. The end.
I liked her as Lara Croft, though. I thought she did a good job.
She sure did. It was great. We just don't need any more of it.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
Jason Momoa outed Ben Affleck as coming back as Batman in Aquaman 2.
Yeah, and he's also going to be in The Flash as Batman, so we still got Batfleck for a couple more movies.
Dude, I don't know if we're going to get that Flash movie with everything going on with Ezra Miller. Like, I know that they've shot out. It. I know that they've shot it. I know that it's probably all in the can, but with everything going on with him, I don't know that they want that kind of publicity. Their universe is already so fucked anyway compared to Marvel's. Like, maybe they just kind of shelf this one and they don't put it out. Pull a New Mutants thing, you know, where they're just like, yeah, we lost the rights or something. And I mean, they just announced today that Flash, the TV series, is going to end after next season. 13 episodes, they're done.
13 episodes in 2023, yep, which is fine. So, it's the longest running Arrowverse show. And so now the Arrowverse will essentially be dead because Lois and Superman takes place in alternate universe.
Yep. Yep, all the other ones are gone, and yeah, CW finally closed that chapter. Good for them.
I think I'm going to go back and watch the final episode of Supergirl.
Oh, yeah?
Just because, why not?
Cat Grant comes back?
Oh, really? Did I watch it already?
Oh, I don't know. No, I figured that would be your reasoning for it, like...
Because we
talked about how we love Cat Grant the most, so I was like, well, if she came back, that would be a reason.
No, I never watched it. I just was going to watch it to watch it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Just the episode, not the whole season.
No, yeah, just the final episode.
Yeah. Well, if you do, let me know how it is.
Did, say Batwoman got canceled, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And then I think the last thing that we've got for news and trailers, because it was a slow week for that stuff. I wasn't checking my feeds regularly. We got the first official trailer for Andor today.
Ooh, what an amazing friggin' trailer.
I gotta say, dude, like, for as much shit as I gave Obi-Wan and as much shit as I gave Solo, because I my biggest problem was we don't need backstories on these people. We already know who they are.
Yeah.
Rogue One was probably my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yes. And
some that would say that that's blasphemy when Empire still exists. Saw a really funny TikTok the other day from a guy who said that if the internet existed in the 80s, people would have ripped on Empire the way that they ripped on The Last Jedi. And it was brilliant. I think I actually saved it. And if I did, I'll send it to you because he made some great points. It was amazing. They're like, why did Luke even go to Dagobah? He wasn't a knight when he went there, and he wasn't a knight when he left. Like, what was it even worth to him? Or canonically speaking, Anakin Skywalker was Luke Skywalker's father, not Darth Vader. I don't know what the hell they're trying to pull here, but it's some bullshit. So I thought that was hilarious. But anyway, as I was saying, Rogue One is my favorite. And knowing that we are going to get more of the beginning of the rebellion, what led to this point, like, oh my God, this is a great point in history to be basing a series. Because most of the characters in Rogue One were so amazing that, yes, I want to know more about them. Because they came out of nowhere and then disappeared.
So, from what I've followed up on Reddit or whatever, I told you earlier 24 episodes. I was wrong.
Aw.
It's 12. But here's what it is. There's going to be two seasons for a total of 24 episodes. And it's going to start 5 years prior to Rogue One. And the end of season two is going to be lead directly into Rogue One.
That's fucking brilliant.
Originally, they were going to do 5 seasons. Each season was a year leading up to Rogue One. Mm-hmm. But they just decided that maybe was too much story to tell, or maybe get too convoluted along the way and this and that, and that he could make a great story with 2 seasons, 24 episodes that tells the story of Cassian Andor from when he was a child, and then 5 years prior to Rogue One up to the start of Rogue One, essentially.
I love that so much. That right there is like, I could kiss somebody.
Yep.
The fact that they know where their story begins and ends, that they're planning it around it, that they are not going to go overboard, that they actually said, well, you know, we were going to do 5 seasons, but that might be too convoluted, so let's keep it at 2. Like, brilliant. Thank you. Love that.
Yep.
Oh, that's so good. I am so looking forward to this. It's not even funny.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped for it. Definitely excited for it.
You know what I really want, especially considering that they're leading us up to Rogue One? I really want Alan Tudyk in there.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping we get to see him. That would make logical sense, wouldn't it?
Because right now he's not listed in the cast and crew, but it's still early, you know?
Yeah.
So I get that, but I really want to see the origin of where he comes from. Because he was fucking amazing. He's Alan Tudyk, so he's always amazing. But his character was just fucking awesome. And I want to know more about him. I want to know his origins. Give me this.
Yep, I would love to see him. Yes, absolutely. And I feel like we will. Because it's not like they met in Rogue One.
Right. The only thing that's going to be like rough for me is the fact that we're getting 24 episodes that take place over 5 years. So this will be pretty streamlined, condensed, you know, that's basically what, 5 episodes per year,
I guess. Yeah.
Cause if you had 25 episodes, 5 years, that would be 5 episodes per year. So we're just about there. So that means, you know, the first 5 episodes or so is year one. And then we get 5 more episodes that are year two, approximately. I mean, maybe they're going to focus on one area more than another. But, you know, we saw Forrest Whitaker, saw Guerrera. He's there. Yeah. We saw Mon Mothma. And I know that it's focusing on Andor, but I have a feeling we're going to be in for some treats.
Yeah, I think so as well. I'm super pumped for it.
Yeah. Anywho, I think that's about it for me. How about you?
Yeah, that's really all I have as well.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to discuss.
I think that's a podcast.
I think it's a podcast. You're right, sir.
Yeah.
You can find me on the Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I am the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's our show.
And we'll talk to you next week or so.